die Blackwings-Fans haben gewählt. Wir haben gefragt, welcher Spieler der Lewis Blackwings Linz soll denn unbedingt einmal interviewt werden oder für ein längeres Gespräch zur Verfügung stehen. Und eine große Mehrheit hat sich für Hunter Feagies ausgesprochen, der mir jetzt in einem Linzer Lokal gegenüber sitzt. Hunter, there was probably a little too long an introduction, but I was just explaining that a majority of fans wanted to get to know you a little closer. So that's why we're here. First of all, thanks for taking the time. Very nice to be talking to you.
Thanks for having me. I don't know why they want to get to know me. I'm just your typical average Joe, but we'll go for it.
Well, the typical average Joe, obviously in terms of understatement, because there's a lot to your career. There's a lot to your life that people might be interested in. First of all, you getting to Austria, it's been, you mentioned to me earlier, we were talking before this obviously as well, that you always wanted to play in Europe. How did it come together that you got to Austria?
Well, it was just kind of like a simple realization that I needed to make a change. I was getting a little worn out of the American style of hockey, and I've always dreamed about coming over to Europe and just seeing a different part of the world. And there's no better way of living out my dream job than playing over and then living over here in Europe. And I was fortunate enough to have contact with Linz and Tom during the summertime. And when I came to this realization in the middle of December, I just I called Tom and was wondering if they had any spots open. And he said he'd get back to me. And I was fortunate enough to be given this opportunity.
You stepping out of the plane, setting foot on Austria for the very first time. Lead me through that. What was the first like Austrian experience for you?
First Austrian experience was probably coming right out of the airport and doing an interview with with the team, which was really cool. I mean, it was right from the first minute I met the staff here. I was so welcomed, and it goes to show how, you know, passionate not only the ownership and the sponsors and the fans, but just how passionate they are with sports in general. And I think that's just really cool for me to see as an athlete, because you want to play in these kind of environments, and you want to play in front of fans that we have here in Linz. And like I kind of told you earlier, it kind of just gets me pumped up knowing that they support you so much, and you know they're willing to go through the highs and the lows of whatever we go through as a team.
Now, before coming here, what did you know about the league, and what did you learn about the league since coming here?
Honestly, I didn't know much about the league before coming here. I knew it was a good league. I knew a lot of people enjoyed playing here. I had a couple friends that played here in years past, and they really enjoyed it. But in terms of what to expect, I had no idea. But since coming here, it's been nothing but eye-opening for me.
In what regard?
There's a lot of really good players here. It's really good hockey. So every day, every game, you got to compete day in and day out. And in order to achieve what you want to achieve, and for us, that's a championship. We have a team that we believe that can go a long way in the playoffs. And so, I'm just trying to focus on what I do best as a player, and so that which is using my speed, my physicality, and my shot in order to help this team achieve what we want to achieve.
Now, yesterday, Sunday, we did broadcast your game against Villach, and I was talking to Steve Oleksy before the game, his very first time on the bigger European surface as well, and he talked about the angles being different, that it takes a little time to get used to it. How did you fare with that regard of the game?
It's definitely a huge adjustment because we play on a smaller sheet in North America. But in terms of my game, I think it kind of helps me out as a player because one of my biggest strengths is my speed and my skating. So I think I was able to kind of expose players and defensemen by using that strength. In terms of the style of play and the systems, that took a little bit of an adjustment, or there was a little bit of an adjustment period. Just trying to handle so much more ice. You know, I actually played on an Olympic size sheet in college for 4 years, but when you go from playing on such a small ice sheet for 4 years and then making that adjustment over, there's going to be an adjustment period again.
You mentioned one of your biggest assets, one of your main traits is the speed. Where is it more advantageous, on the bigger sheet, on the smaller one, or is speed in general always a good trait in hockey?
Well, obviously you always want to use your speed. If you haven't, you got to use it, because the game is transforming into more of a skill and speed and less kind of fighting and physical game. And I was able to use it really well on the smaller rink, but I think it comes into play even more on NHL, or I mean on the rinks over here in Europe, because you can spin off of guys or catch the puck in the neutral zone and take defensemen wide, and you have more room to kind of use that to your advantage.
Now, interestingly enough, you're North American, but you are very unique North American because you're one of the very few, as relates to the overall population, who grew up in Alaska, in Anchorage. Give us some perspective on what it's like to grow up in the northwesternmost point of the U.S.
I love it. I kind of give my buddies a hard time, because I say that's God's country up there, and there's just so. I'm a big outdoorsman. I love hiking, fishing, camping, hunting. Whenever I can, I try to spend my time up there and doing the things that I enjoy that I don't always get to do because of the hockey season. And anytime I can, my dad owns two hunting and fishing lodges up in Alaska, so I kind of grew up doing all that kind of stuff, and so that's kind of a way that my dad and I were always able to bond growing up, and being able to experience different fishing trips or hunting trips. And I always, you know, even to this day, I never go hunting by myself. The only time I'll ever go hunting is with my dad, and we have a really close relationship. So
now, how does one get into hockey in Alaska?
Well, I'd say hockey is a big sport up there. It's a cold climate, and a lot of people go skating and all that kind of stuff. I remember growing up in Alaska, and you know, my buddies and I, we get done with school or on the weekends, and we weren't always so consumed on electronics, because that wasn't a big thing growing up. And we would go out to the local outdoor rink and, you know, play some pickup hockey, or whether or not it was just on a frozen lake. And those are the moments you were able to, you know, kind of work on your game, whether it be like shooting or just kind of stick handling or kind of deking out another player. And those are the moments I'll look back and really remember. That's kind of why I fell in love with the game. But in terms of how I started playing hockey, I just remember growing up, or before I was born, my dad had this, you know, hunting and fishing lodge, and one of his clients was the doctor for Mario Lemieux, who was an unbelievably great player that played for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And he was going through his cancer treatments, and my dad had this client come to his lodge. It was like, hey, have you ever seen a hockey NHL game before? And my dad was like, no, I've never seen one before. He's like, well, you should come to Pittsburgh and I'll take you to one. And sure enough, it was a playoff hockey game. And after the game, my dad was taken down into the locker room and got to meet all these great players like Mario Lemieux, Paul Coffey, Yammer Yager, and And my dad didn't know at the time the people, or like the presence of the people that he was around. And he just thought it was the coolest thing. He went back home and told my mom, this is, I want our kid to play hockey. And, you know, I started started on skates when I was two, and started playing on a team when I was three, and the rest is history from there.
Now, there are a handful of great players who made it onto the NHL. Scott Gomez comes to mind from Alaska, but because of its remote location, would you say it is more difficult to end up having a pro career when you're from Alaska, or do you have to sacrifice more earlier to be successful in a sport?
I think it's a very hard sport regardless of where you live. I hate to kind of describe it in this sense, but like, you gotta be somewhat kind of privileged in a sense to play this sport, because it costs so much money. You know, it costs a lot for the equipment, the training, the ice time, and the travel, especially in the States. For example, playing in Alaska, if you wanted exposure as a hockey team, you would have to travel down to the lower 48, to the rest of the States, and for tournaments and different games and stuff like that. And that's not only a burden on your parents, but it takes a wear and tear on your body, and it really tests whether or not you as a player really love the game. And I think as for me growing up, you really had to sacrifice a lot, whether it be, you know, you really had to focus, figure out what was important as a player. You got to focus on your schooling. You got to sometimes sacrifice your social, just being social around your friends and all that kind of stuff. And
not to interrupt you, but I do think this is very important that we bring up a heartbreaking story that comes along with it, because you lost your mom at a very early age, had to cope with that, still played hockey. How did that all interact and play into each other?
I think that had a big piece of me being where I'm at today. I was in a car accident with my mom when I was 10 years old, and she ended up dying on the scene. I got rushed to the hospital. It was a hit and run. I had 45 stitches in my leg, or I was in a coma for a week and a half. I had 45 stitches in my leg, 20 staples in my head. I had a blood clot the size of a baseball. I had a collapsed lung. And what people probably don't know about me is I'm deaf in my left ear as well. And so for me, that was a lot to take in. I remember waking up finally out of the coma and was wondering. I asked my dad the first question. I was like, hey, like, where's mom? And he's like, she just wants you to get better. And then a few days later, once I got released from the, a few days later after I got released from the hospital, my dad ended up telling me that my mom passed away, and that was heartbreaking. You know, I was like her little prince. They always wanted a boy, and my sisters are quite a bit older than I am. There's like a 5 or 6 year difference between us, and so that, you know, I was always prototypical mama's boy. And and so, like, I remember a lot of things growing up, and you don't ever forget the memories that you made with her. But in terms of like what you're talking about, it was a big toll on my family. Like, I have two older sisters and my dad, and my dad owns those two hunting and fishing lodges. So, and he was always gone, you know, periodically taking kind of running the family business, and my mom would take care of my two sisters and I And then my oldest sister at the time, who was 18, had to take care of, basically just had to become a mom for my younger sister and myself. And that's a lot to take in, as, you know, being an 18-year-old. And she's trying to figure out what she wants to do after high school, get a job, like all that kind of stuff, whether or not she wants to go to college. And my hat goes off to her. She really put her best foot forward for being in the situation that she was in. And but it was tough. You know, we were three young kids, and my school wasn't relatively close to where we were living, and so my sister would have to wake us up in the morning, make breakfast for us, and then take us to school, and then deal with our homework and laundry and all that kind of stuff. And it made all of us grow up at a really young age and kind of figure out what was important in life or what wasn't important. And then eventually my dad asked if I could just stay at one of my best friend's houses in the spring and the fall, and so I would live there during the winter time, or I'd live there during the week, and then on the weekends I would stay at home. And you know, that as great as that is, you know, living with one of your buddies, you know, you want to grow up at home and all that kind of stuff. And I knew it was a sacrifice. And then I just remember going to a tournament in Chicago, Illinois, with my team in Alaska. And I heard about this boarding school in Minnesota from one of my best friends. His older brother went there at the time. And I met, I walked in the rink, and there was a booth at Red Shed at St. Mary's on it. And this all-time great NHL hockey player, named JP Parisi, he was behind the booth. And you know, I'm a young 11-year-old walking up to this booth by myself, and I started talking to him, and he ended up giving me a brochure. And I took that brochure to my dad, and I was like, "Dad, this is where I want to go to school." And we visited that next summer. I went to a hockey camp there over the summertime, and then I went there the next year. And I went there for 5 years. It was, you know, your standard, basically boarding school. You know, I was 12 years old at the time, lived in dorms and away from home. It was probably the hardest goodbye I've ever said was to my dad. I remember us both crying and just nervous. And he wanted the best for me. He obviously wanted the best for me, and he's always said that he wants to give a better life to me than what he had growing up. And he's done more than that. And so I went there for 5 years, and it was probably the best experience I ever had. I created some lifelong relationships with not only my classmates, but my teammates and my coaches and my teachers and people that I still talk to this day. It was just a really cool experience, because I was able to talk to these, or like, I was, for example, my eighth grade class had 35 kids in it. So you lived with these guys, played hockey with them on the same team, you travel with them on the road, you live with them in the dorms.
Of course, there's some bonding.
Yeah, there's some bonding, and some of them, you'd see some guys leave throughout my 5 years, or some guys would be there the whole time. And I was fortunate enough to win two national championships there, but to go back to what you're saying is, like, I've been through a lot of hardship, but I feel like I wouldn't have, if my mom was still here today, I wouldn't have went to boarding. I don't think I would have went to boarding school. And
it still puts things more than into perspective, and teaches you what really matters, and that sports indeed is just pastime.
Yeah. And I mean, sports is great. It's gotten me I've been able to experience so much in my lifetime, and I've kind of devoted a lot of my time to it. But if I could go back and give it all up just to have my mom here, I would. But you know, sometimes life threw my family a curveball, and we adjusted. It took us a while, but I think we grew not only as a family, but as individuals as well.
It's kind of tough to conduct this interview after just hearing from your hardship, from very personal experience and feelings. So it's kind of weird to try to go back. But obviously, you've been through a tremendous amount of hardship. But that kind of enabled you to become or start a hockey career. At what point of your career did you think, okay, I might have a pro career in this?
That honestly didn't start until I was a senior in high school, so 18. I was always the late bloomer in a sense. I was the one that would never really grew growing up, and I was always really, really skilled when I was younger. In Alaska, I was always, you know, one of the better players, and which is another reason why I went to that boarding school at Shattuck. But then when I got to Shattuck, it was the best of the best at this boarding school. Everyone was good, and so it was like I was just one in 500, you know, so that was eye-opening for me as a player. And when I was there in eighth grade, like, I did well my eighth grade year. Ninth grade year, everyone started going through puberty, and they all started growing and starting to get, you know, hair on their chests and hair on their faces, and I was still like that. I looked like a little infant, and I was still that little small kid, and so that was tough for me. And there was a point where I wanted to give up. I wanted to quit hockey. Like, it was because I had some hard coaches there, and then my dad, you know, obviously cares for me, and he was consulting with a bunch of different people, but he didn't tell me that. And we talked on the phone, and he was like, "Afi just doesn't quit what he starts." That's what he told me, and that's always stuck with me throughout my whole life. And
so you stuck with it all through college, got drafted, end up in the system.
So then my 10th grade year, I came back. I started just really. I started to grow. I started to work out. I gained muscle and all this kind of stuff, and my game just really started to develop. And a lot of people around me, whether it was, you know, different coaches and different close family friends, they really helped me out, like transform my game into what it needed to be. And a little tangent is, like, I really benefited from being a late bloomer, because you were able to see what worked and fight through adversity of not being the best, and being able to kind of work hard to overcome and try to compete against these guys that were always so much better, and then kind of end up passing them up, you know, in a sense, rather than just being always being the good player, then always being the good player, and then suddenly everyone just passes you up. And I think just being able to work through the hard times, like, it, no matter what you do in life, there's always going to be adversity, there's always going to be tough times, and nothing in life's going to be easy, and so you got to always find a way to, like, push through it. And I think throughout my life, that's always kind of been the case, is there's been a lot of hard times, a lot of difficult situations, and just finding ways to, like, push through it. And whether you don't see that solution right away, you just kind of keep working hard, and eventually you start to see the bigger picture, and it starts to come together for you. And so then I made my 10th grade year, like I was saying, I made the worst team at this school, like the worst team. And I just, that's when I wanted to quit. And then my dad told me that. And so I kept working and I kept working. And then I had a great year. And then at the end of that season, I went up to the head of hockey, director of hockey at Chattuck. And I told the coach, he was also the coach for the best team there at the school, that only you would really make if you're 11th or 12th grader, or if you're a really good 11th grader or a 12th grader. And I was like, I went into his office. I was like, hey, what do I have to do to make your team next year? And that's skipping like two teams at Chattuck. And he's like, basically told me what I had to do, said it's never been done before. And I was like, I'm going to come back. I'm going to make your team. I told that to him straight up and right to his face. And I went into the summer. I went to this, I ended up making the national development camp and all that kind of stuff during the summer, and led the place in scoring and had a bunch of interest from colleges. And I came back and to school, was at tryouts, and I ended up making the team. And it was never been done before. And
has it been done after?
One other guy. Yeah, one other guy. So I was able to kind of set the stage for younger kids growing up, and they kind of used me as an example. And you know, whether or not kids wanna like grasp the idea of like working for things. And I think that's one thing that's kind of lacking in today's society, is just kids willing to work and keep pushing through things, and
not taking things for granted.
Yeah, not taking things for granted, because not everything's going to come easy, like I've said. And
You were talking so much about personal hardship, but also about darker times in sports. What was maybe the most hardship you had to go through in a sportive aspect, and what did you do to climb out of that hole, for the lack of a better word?
Well, like I was telling you about, being that late bloomer and almost quitting hockey, and then being on the worst team there at boarding school, that was probably, and then just kept working hard and came over that sense. But you know, in terms of after that, like I played on some teams that where we didn't have much success at all. You know, I went through injuries, and I think it was my sophomore year of college. I just played my freshman year the year before, and freshman of the year, like led the freshman in points and all that kind of stuff, and came back my sophomore year and went through a high ankle sprain and kind of an MCL sprain, and I only had 1 point in like 20 games or something like that. And it could have been a combination of things, but the way I kind of look at life right now is like, with all these hard times that come my way, if I could go through the hardest thing of losing my mother at such a young age and being able to go through like what I've gone through, then I can get through anything, whether in a sport and anything in life, because that was the hardest thing I've ever had to go through. And my family would say the same.
Most definitely. When I had a look at your career and the career trajectory, was wondering like how, you obviously got drafted, yeah. Never really made it to the NHL yet, but you were in the farm system, you bounced up and down in the AHL, East Coast Hockey League. What is it like to be, I don't want to use the word trapped in the system, but what is it like if you're in a system bouncing from one location, destination to another?
I would say it's very difficult. It's very hard on your body. And in terms of the American hockey system, professional hockey system, it's very mentally exhausting. There's so much uncertainty. At times, you just kind of feel like you're a number within a big group of people. And I think out of my 4 years, I was up and down every single year, and I basically could never get never got established anywhere. You know, I whether or not I was in the AHL, I lived out of a hotel. Last year, I lived out of a hotel for 5 months, living out of a suitcase, and not knowing from day to day whether or not you're going to be there. And so I think it helped me become mentally stronger as a person, as a player as well, and just realizing that, you know, so many things are out of my control, and just focusing on what I can control each and every day, which is my effort and my attitude. And if I come in with a positive attitude and work 110%, then I'll give it my all, and see how things unfold after that. But you know, in order to make it to the NHL, you know,
still in the back of the head have that dream of someday making it?
Absolutely. I mean, that's every kid's dream growing up, and obviously I'd love to still play in the NHL. I'm on a little different route right now, but you need all the pieces to fall in play, and you need somebody to be supporting you and backing you within a system, and you know, it's tough. I mean, the percentage of people when they're really young making it to, for example, where I'm at today is very, very slim. And people making it to the NHL it's very, very slim as well. So, yeah.
But also people have a pro hockey career in general, which you achieved. I'll leave the hockey a little to the side now, because there are a couple interesting personal things about you. You mentioned earlier that you're fluent in another foreign language, a very exotic one. How did it come that you're speaking fluent Japanese?
Well, I went to a Japanese school for 8 years from kindergarten through seventh. So I went to, it was a Japanese school where you'd speak half Japanese, half English from kindergarten through 12th grade. And I did it. I went to school there from kindergarten through 7th grade until I went to boarding school at Shattuck in Minnesota. And after my 6th grade graduation, we went to Japan and as a kind of a class. So you could either decide whether or not you wanted to stay with a host family and go to school and like kind of learn the everyday life of what it's like to be a Japanese student, or you could go on a 2.5 week tour around a bunch of different cities in Japan. And I ended up doing the 2.5 week tour. Went to, you know, Tokyo, Nagasaki, Osaka, like Kyoto, and ended up going to Japan, Disneyland, and it was so eye opening for me. I don't know why I remember this, but one of my good friends, his dad was just so tall. And I just remember we were walking around downtown and all these kids and whatever, these Japanese kids like jumping up and trying to be as tall as him. And, but yeah, just the everyday life. And I ended up doing that for 8 years, and then I went to boarding school. They didn't have the closest thing they had was Chinese, and so then I ended up taking Spanish for 5 years, and after that I went to college and decided to pick up Japanese again.
Did you start German lessons here as well, or is that kind of a plan in the books?
Yeah, that's the plan. Hopefully, in a couple, you know, who knows if I'll. You know, I wanna play here for as long as I can, and then maybe in a couple of years I'll be speaking German in this interview.
Hopefully, maybe even in a couple of months' time, if you're as gifted a language learner as it's seeming. One other question leads me back to something that you said a little bit earlier when talking about the other states. You were talking about the lower 48.
Yeah, it's a kind of a reference to people in the U.S. and definitely people in Alaska use. So you got 50 states, One of them is Alaska, which is, you know, the highest northern state. And then you got...
Pretty remote.
Yeah, and then you got Hawaii, which is an island. So then people up in Alaska, they refer to the other 48 states as the lower 48.
I just wanted to mention this because it kind of seems as if there is some unique Alaska mindset. Is that a correct assessment? And if so, what does the mindset of a typical person from Alaska look like as compared to other North Americans?
You know, I would say that the typical Alaskan person would be just outdoorsy, you know, somebody that's adventurous, loves to go camping, hiking, fishing, hunting, like snowboarding, skiing. A lot of people, you know, they're not so highly consumed in fashion, because, you know, you don't have that, because a lot more people are more rugged up there, and
it makes total sense. Like, Alaska seems so far away from this part of the world.
It actually is. I remember I tried talking to my dad, and it's 10. We talk every day, and
9 hours.
10 hours.
10 hours.
So, and I wake up in the morning. It's 10 o'clock at night for him, and I call him, say goodnight to him, and he wishes me a good day. You know.
But is there, apart from the time difference, is this something that struck you when you got here in terms of difference, or what stood out, like, in everyday life, a drastic difference, or maybe a similarity?
Well, I'd say the biggest thing is obviously the time difference, but it's not as easy for my family to come see me, you know, and it's a big commitment to come over.
But your father has got ties to Austria, of all places.
Yeah, he actually goes to Salzburg every year and for a show, and then over to Madrid and for his business, and so he always said really good things about Austria and Salzburg, and just as, because that's all he's really experienced. He's never been to Vienna or Linz by any means, and but it's pretty funny, like, just being over here, he calls me one day and he'll be like, yeah, you know, I was reading up on Linz, and they have some really cool museums there. You should go check them out. Or just he
so he does the research for you.
He does the research for me, and I I end up just taking his advice and going to do them. So
now you've been here for 2 months. You also had the chance to explore the country a little bit during the international break. What did you do? What you were up to?
I went to Vienna for a day, and then Salzburg for a day, and I want to go to Hallstatt and visit there. But
you could make good use of your Japanese there.
Yeah, I could. I heard there's a lot of tourists there, and I try to get a couple of my teammates to go, but they've already been too many times. I try to get Matt Finn to come with me, and Alex Sien, but Matt Finn says he always gives me an excuse, saying he's already been there too many times, he ain't going again. And then Alex Sien says, he's like, I'm from here, I don't need to be going there. And so I give those guys a hard time every time I see them. I'm like, yeah, you guys, on an off day, I'll be like, yeah, you guys want to go to Hallstatt? They're like, I'm not going to Hallstatt with you. So
no. You mentioned your dad, pretty interesting, because come playoff time, he's supposed to be in Austria, so I reckon he could be at one of your games. What would it mean to, or what does it mean to play in front of your dad when you know he's in the stands? How often has it happened, and do you play differently, or does it bother you at all?
Well, in the States, I obviously my dad always came down and saw me whenever he could. He would just catch a flight sometimes and just come, whether when he's in Alaska, he would just come for
quick 8-hour flight.
Yeah, quick 6-hour flight or something to Chicago, come watch me play, and then go home the next day, like that type of thing. And I mean, the continuous support and love he has for his kids is admirable, and And so, you know, I'm excited for him to come here and be here and let me show him around, like, the city. And I tell him all the stories about the fans and the rink and just how great it is. But, you know, words can only do so much. It doesn't do it justice. And so I'm excited for him to come over here. I mean, obviously, I love when he's in the stands watching me. I try to play the best I can each and every night. But, you know, I'd say when he's here, or when he's in the stands watching me, regardless where we're at, I always try to play a little bit better and a little bit harder.
Now, one of the things you also touch base on is how very different the fans here are. Obviously, in Linz, you've got one of the best home crowds, but also the experience at away games for you has been pretty special. Could you educate fans a little bit from your perspective, how you see things?
I mean, when playing in the United States or North America in general, we have really big stadiums. We basically sometimes almost sell out at a lot of them, but the way that they interact with the game isn't nearly like the way that they do here. For instance, like during the play, while the play is going on, everyone is basically silent and they just watch the game. Everyone sits down. No one brings flags or drums or anything like that. And when you score a goal, like they're loud. But when you're here in Europe, I mean, people will stand up the whole game. People will bring drums. Everyone will buy jerseys for the most part and bring flags. And I mean, it's loud the whole game. I mean,
lead me through your very first home game. You out of the tunnel into the arena. What went through your head?
It was crazy. I was so energized, excited, and pumped up to play for in front of these fans. And I had no idea what to expect. I just remember having to go out behind Justin Florek, and I'm like, hey, we call him Flo, and I'm like, Flo, am I in the right spot? Like, when do I go? Like, what's going on here? and he's like, they'll call your name after they call my name, and then you go out, and then you stand right next to me. And I just remember when they called Hunter, and then the fans yelled Fegis, I remember just running out there, and I think I almost got hit by one of the big flags in the middle, but I'm lucky that didn't happen in my first game.
And just shows how savvy the hockey crowd here is, if they got your name right the very first time. How many different ways of your name have you heard being pronounced?
I think everyone here has called me a right. I think it might be because I'm it's a Hungarian name, and we're close to Hungary for the most part. And I remember talking to my dad. I'm like, when we played the team in Hungary, he's like, yeah, have you your name comes from Hungary. I was like, Dad, I know. Like, I've been at the hotel. I've already seen three people with the same last name as me. He's like, no way, really? And I'm like, I'm just messing with you. I haven't. And he started laughing. But no, I've heard growing up, you know, like Fegis, fajitas.
Okay, you've heard it all. I've already taken way too much time with you, which I'm very thankful for. So I'm kind of trying to conclude this. Obviously, 11 teams started the season, everyone competing for a championship. Only one team's at the very end going to be rewarded. Even if it doesn't end with the championship this year for you and your team, what has to happen for you to say it still was a good year?
Obviously, everyone wants to win with a championship. But we just, you know, we make the playoffs, and as long as we fight each and every night and know that we gave it our all out there. And, you know, obviously every series that we play in the playoffs, every game's not going to go our way. But as long as we are resilient and hardworking. There's no reason why we can't go far. And, you know, I think everyone has in the back of their mind that we have a championship team. And just making sure that we stick with the process and keep our game simple and focus on and hoping that each player on our team is doing what they do best. And if we do that and we buy in as a team, then no one can stop us because we've competed with the best teams in the league.
Couldn't have put it any better. Hunter Features, thanks for taking such extensive time.
Thank you.